Welcome to the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast.
Coming up today, we'll get you set for the start of spring training games with Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. Plus, we'll chat with Ernesto Friere, Jeff Beliveau, and Everett Tiefert.
This is Rays Radio. Now here's your host, Neil Solons.
Thanks for joining us this Tuesday, March 2nd. In 2 days, spring training games start. A lot already has taken place this spring before a game has been played. So let's begin there.
Time now to head up to the press box.
And we continue our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. And joining us, as he's been here every day here in Port Charlotte, Mark Topkin for the Tampa Bay Times. Mark, we've gone through a little more than a full week of spring training. So as we're 2 days away finally from games, what are your top stories?
Well, yeah, I think this week the big story over the last week was, you know, Kevin Cash giving his address to the full team and getting everybody out there. And you know, talking to Kevin really over the last couple weeks, he kind of was targeting that day where he wanted everyone in the same room, everyone kind of on the same message, and the reviews to his comments, they were brief, but they were very direct. It sounds like this is really going to be a team that, you know, backs each other up, that, you know, if people want to look at them as underdogs, they're going to embrace that. They're not going to back down to things. You know, maybe a little bit of bravado in that speech. And I think, you know, talking to a couple of veteran guys, and specifically Alex Cobb and Evan Longoria, they took it very well. So that, to me, was the big thing, Neil, was just getting everybody back out on the field. I mean, a couple other little things of note in the last few days. The Rays unveiled a sign, a very touching move. Actually, as we sit here today and talk about this, you see, look out and see the sign, Don Zimmer Way, on the cart path that he took to the fields. And, you know, I think there's a double entendre to that, and it's a very good one. If everyone grew up and learned how to do things the Don Zimmer way, they'd all be very much better for it. So that was one thing. A little bit of news in that, you know, Mike Montgomery, who's been a starter for the last pretty much his whole career, really, and he has been at AAA over the last 4 years for the most part between the Royals and the Rays, they're now going to move him to the bullpen, and that actually might get him to the big leagues. So, you know, especially with Jake McGee out, I think looking at that, you know, first month of the season, the Rays want to have a number of options, and one is possibly seeing Mike Montgomery in the bullpen. And really, I think that was, for the most part, the highlights of the last week or so.
What wasn't a highlight was Ronald Belisario, and probably one of the more unique injuries that someone had prior to getting to spring training. And really, that's opened the door for Montgomery and lots of others.
Yeah, in fact, we were going to use a pool reporter to get to the bottom of that story and then see if we could drain it. But no, he claims that he was injured playing in his pool in Venezuela about a month ago. Hit his shoulder on the lip of the pool, getting out of the pool, didn't realize at the time he was hurt badly, doesn't tell the team, hasn't signed yet, signs his contract. The Rays didn't require a physical at that point, so he flies here, gets to camp actually a day or two late because of a visa issue, and then when he tells the training staff his shoulder hurts, they have him go through some x-rays and MRIs, and next thing you know, he's got a fractured shoulder, and he's going to be out at least a couple weeks. Talking to him, though, the other day, he actually said, you know, just now that he's got it treated, he's in a sling. I'm sure they're giving him some medicine. He's feeling better. He thought he'd only be behind a couple weeks and could be in the big leagues if they choose to put him there sometime in mid to late April.
Now, for the start of the season, though, you've kind of altered who you see as the final two spots in the bullpen right now.
Yeah, and, you know, part of that is still going to be up in the air, but depending on how long it takes Alex Colomé to get here and whether he can still, and what I think will end up being that fifth starter to open the season. Now, if he ends up too far behind, that could further shuffle things. But if Colomé is the fifth starter, I would think Carnes would be down in the minors. That leaves two spots in the bullpen. You know, one we just talked about, maybe it's Mike Montgomery, maybe it's C.J. Riefenhauser, maybe they don't go with a second lefty and they just have Jeff Beliveau as the only lefty. And then from the right-hand side, you know, they may need a long guy, or they will need a long guy. That could be Birch Smith would be a possibility if Montgomery isn't that guy. You know, and you still have to look, obviously, at Kirby Yates, Brandon Gomes, and a couple of those type of guys.
And you had both Smith and Gomes, at least on Sunday, as your latest guys to make the 25-man roster, which I would assume is ever-evolving, especially with the number of guys competing.
Yeah, and really the purpose of that isn't to be right. I mean, it would be great, but then it also wouldn't change if I got it right the first week and didn't change it. So it's to kind of reflect things, and you know, because the games haven't started yet, it's a little bit even more speculative than it typically is, because you're just kind of going off feel and chatter and what you hear. And you know, having to take Belisario out, my thinking was, well, now they kind of need a ground ball guy, and Brandon Gomes might be that ground ball guy. That's why I put him on, but then you needed somebody with some length, so that's why I switched to Birch Smith.
It certainly will be interesting to follow as the bullpen turns, so to speak. Do we have any concerns about how long Grant Balfour will be before he returns? I know you know, when we spoke last week, it was supposed to be 5 days to a week, and we're probably not far from that now.
Yeah, and you know, obviously the Rays are being sensitive to the situation. You know, for people listening that don't recall, as he left camp, his father is very ill, pancreatic cancer. Grant was there in December, thought he might not see him again. He got a phone call that something was amiss, so the Rays were nice enough, you know, in their regard to let him go. He is still over in Australia as we talk here today. And, you know, I think the Rays seem okay, the fact that he's on a throwing program over there. He's obviously working out with somebody. And, you know, he was going to be about a week behind anyway because they wanted him to kind of save some bullets. He threw a lot at the Trop during the winter. So, you know, I don't think that's as big of a concern. I would think, to be honest with you, that Colomé not getting here, even though, you know, Kevin Cash has been saying he's throwing at their complex in Dominican, he's throwing to hitters, it's just not the same, Neil. And it's not going to be the same now the exhibition games are starting. And that, to me, is where his absence will even be more noted.
So if he gets here by Thursday when the exhibition games start, then maybe he hasn't really lost anything. But when we get beyond that, in your mind, it starts to become more of an issue?
Probably the first week. If he's not on the field, you know, if he doesn't pitch sometime in that first week of games, I mean, Drew Smyly's not going to make his first appearance. He told us he thought the 10th or 11th. The 9th actually lines up for him. But even if it's the 10th or 11th, you know, I think if Alex Colomé is here, but he's going to, I'm sure the Rays are going to want him to throw a couple of bullpens here and a couple of live batting practices. If it gets much past that 10th or 11th day, it's just hard to kind of think of how he would be ready just given the typical buildup. Now, maybe the typical buildup isn't always necessary. He probably was a little more active during the winter than some of their other guys. But still, you do wonder, especially when he's in a competition.
Hmm. And that will bear watching with Nathan Carnes on Thursday, slated to get, I guess, the first crack at this. He'll be the first guy to start and pitch in any of the exhibition games this year. You've had a chance, I know, to talk to him a little bit. He seems, you know, fairly well ready, I guess, to get moving with the competition, so to speak.
Yeah, and Nathan is still, you know, young in that respect. I think of, you know, a lot of what he tells you is, you know, the obvious, and, you know, he's excited about the opportunity. And, you know, what I took away from his comments the other day was he's not a big spring training guy. He wants to get to the season. But, you know, I think we both know if you come into camp and they're telling you you have a chance to break with the team, be in the rotation at the start of the year at the big league level, that is a much bigger deal than a typical spring training. So maybe that's a good defense mechanism.
I would concur with that. Now, as we sit here in spring training, there are 62 of 63 players reported. With all that, there are some very good stories to follow. And one of them you followed was with Andrew Bilotti, a non-roster invite over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, a guy who's been in the Rays minor league system, was a draft pick a number of years ago and was involved in a situation in January of 2010. He was the driver in a fatal accident. He lost control of his car. He had his girlfriend in the car with him. He hit an oncoming vehicle, killed the man driving that car. The son of the man who died was also injured, and Andrew served some time in jail. He spent some time in some counseling program. He's been able to stay with the Rays. He's kept his career going, and it was a really interesting story because not only talking to Andrew about he's kind of grown through this incident, and obviously, you know, you think about that, a 19-year-old kid having to go to jail for, you know, about 80 days or so, but also I was able to speak to the widow, and it turns out she was a key part of Andrew being able to get where he is because she spoke out to the judge, asked for leniency, didn't see the benefit of putting him away for a long time, and he really didn't miss any time baseball-wise as a result. He paid his legal obligations. But he was able to keep his career going, and she seemed, you know, very humanitarian in her efforts as well.
And here he is in his first major league spring training. Everyone is here on different paths, and that's really kind of the fun of getting through a spring training in part.
Absolutely, and, you know, one of the things, you know, just talking about some of the other guys, and, you know, there's an interesting story to a lot of these guys, how they got signed. I mean, you have a guy like Robert Zarate who was pitching in a Japanese, you know, semi-pro team, and there's other players who've overcome injuries. There's players who've been scouted who were playing softball. There's all kinds of things going on. So there's different guys who have taken different paths to get here, and that's, you know, part of how baseball works and part of what makes it so interesting every spring.
No doubt. In fact, we're going to hear from one of those, Ernesto Freire, a little bit later on in our podcast. Mark, what do we look forward to? Maybe not later in the show, but later on this week regarding the Rays and the exhibition games.
Well, I think one thing that we will be, I'm sure, dissecting and probably overanalyzing is going to be the batting orders. Once, you know, Kevin Cash puts them up, that's going to be one storyline. And, you know, where they slot Evan Longoria, is that going to be third or fourth? Who's going to be at the top of the batting order? I mean, you would think maybe Desmond Jennings or Kevin Kiermaier, but I've heard John Jaso is a possibility, at least against right-handed pitchers. You know, they've talked about telling Desmond Jennings to kind of shed that leadoff mentality and you know, picture himself as the middle of the order hitter. You know, how Steven Souza gets used, I assume it's going to be in right field and probably in the middle of the order, but I've heard someone suggest he might hit second. So there's all kinds of different possibilities with the lineup. The other storyline, and again, it's going to, some people will think it's being overanalyzed, but I think it's going to be covering Kevin Cash and just how he handles it. He's never managed a game. So Thursday, you know, whether he does anything distinguishable or not, it will be historic, and that'll be the first time he's ever managed a baseball game.
Well, we'll be broadcasting it. He'll be covering it. Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times, thanks for joining us.
Anytime, Neil.
That's Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times in a segment we like to call From the Press Box. As we discussed, there certainly are a lot of interesting stories in spring training. Many of them are featured on our blog at raysradio.mlblogs.com, where we also post news and notes throughout the day. You can also follow me on Twitter at Neil Solons or check out at Rays Radio. Now, coming up, we've got some great conversations with Ernesto Frieri, Jeff Beliveau, and Everett Tiefert right after this.
Rays baseball is back at Charlotte Sports Park. Named the number one spring training ballpark by readers of USA Today, the venue features fun for the whole family. Get in on the action with the spring training 3-pack. This great offer allows you to choose any three games and starts at just $39. Plus, you get a commemorative photo ball with each pack purchased. Call 888-FAN-RAYS or visit raysbaseball.com/spring today. Raise up.
Welcome back to our This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. I'm Neil Solons. You know, the Rays have been awful good at fixing pitchers, especially relievers. Fernando Rodney and Joaquin Benoit are names that certainly come to mind. Could Ernesto Frieri be next? Well, time will tell on that one, but he's making a good impression so far in spring training. What led him to sign with the Rays? Time to find out and hear his amazing story.
I gotta say that as a baseball player, as a guy that loves to compete, I like to get better each year. And I figured out the pitching coach here, he knows what he's doing. He fixed a couple guys in the past, so I just wanted to give me a chance to see if I can get the right information. And so far, I can say that I made the right decision. You know, like, this is a great ball team, great coaches, and really young team, and I like it because the energy is what we need to play this game. So we're going to have a lot of good energy this year.
You mentioned fixing guys. You came, your best years were with the Angels. Fernando Rodney came after being with the Angels. Could you be another Fernando like that?
I can't. I don't like comparing with somebody else, but I just want to be the guy that I know that I can be, and the guy that the show a couple years ago the can pitch at this level and can do the job, and hopefully my pitching coach here clean the mess that I was last year, but so far I'm good right now. I feel like really good. And I feel that I'm 100% back. That I'm the old Ernie that everybody saw a couple years ago, and I feel really, really good right now.
Before you got to camp, did you find something at all? Did you go to tape and look and said, "Here's where I want to be"?
Yeah, I mean, I look. I always when the season was over last year, I went straight to Colombia. You know, working with my old teammates over there, the guy that know me for a long time. So he helped me out a little bit with my mechanic. And then I came here, find this pitching coach from California, from the Tustin High School in California. He helped me out a lot, man. That guy, yeah, he did a couple of stats in my mechanic. And I feel that I'm back, man. Like, my fastball is coming out pretty good. And changeup and slider are really good. And my arm feel like really, really good. So can't wait for the season to start, you know. Like, it's going to be a fun year.
Some people say that the bullpen guys who've had a lot of success here say one of the big reasons why is the relaxed clubhouse atmosphere. How important do you think that is to perform, to be in a place where you can feel comfortable?
Oh, yeah. That's 50% of your success, because you can be as good as anybody else, but if you don't feel good, you won't play good. I always say, like, you have to look good, feel good, and play good. And if you don't have those three things, you won't do your 100%. So right now I feel really good. I mean, the guys, I feel like I've been playing here for 10 years. Like, the guys, they received me, like, really good. And the coaches, all the guys, they've been really nice to me.
When I look at you and I hear your voice, you remind me a little bit of a guy who was in our clubhouse for many years and was a big part of the bullpen, in Joel Peralta. Do you know Joel at all? And what does that mean to hear someone say that?
Well, Joel, he's amazing, man. Everybody loves him. Every team that he played against to do, you see, like, he's like part of the other team too. You know, he play around with anybody on baseball, American guys, Latin guy, it doesn't matter. So he's a really nice guy. He's really valuable for a team. I mean, you always want to have a guy like him on the clubhouse. I talked to him a couple times ago before, and yeah, he was amazing. I'm sad that he left, but, you know, this is the game. This is business sometimes. And thank you. Thank you for saying that my personality is a little bit just like his.
You have a very unique story, too, in terms of what got you excited about baseball. You come from Colombia, where I guess probably the first famous major leaguer is Edgar Renteria, and he's what turned you on to the game, yes?
Yes, sir, you're right. I mean, I remember that like it happened yesterday. I was watching the game in 1997, Marlins against the Indian Cleveland. It was the game number 7 of the World Series. So Edgar Renteria was batting, bases loaded, the game tied. I think it was 11 or 12 inning of the game. So he hit the base hit to the middle, and they win it all. So my family was like jumping, like screaming, so happy, so proud about Edgar Renteria. Next morning, Edgar Renteria was in all news. The whole town where I live, the people was like crazy about Renteria. And I was like, dude, like, I want to make my people feel like that, too. I want to play baseball. I'm going to be like Edgar Renteria, and I'm going to be on TV. I'm going to make my family feel proud of me. So from that day, I started practicing baseball, and I got in love with the game. So I always say thanks to Renteria, I'm playing baseball, because he was the one who inspires me.
Have you had many chances to meet him and talk to him about that?
Oh, yeah. I remember that the first time that I talked to him, I told him, the first thing that I said to him, hey, Edgar, thank you, man. And he was like, thanks for what? And I was like, because you, I'm playing baseball. And he's like, what I did to you? I don't know. And I told him what happens, and he started crying. He was like, oh, man, hey, thank you, man, thank you. But he's such a really nice guy.
Obviously, the number of Colombians now in baseball, it's like a family. And you mentioned, you know, you say family. You're now playing closer to home, closer to family. What does that mean here, too?
Yeah, that was why I picked here, too. You know, like, you know, before when I was in California, it was too far. You know, like, people doesn't want to travel that far, and they always make excuses. But now I'm closer to Colombia, so... I think that I won't hear that many excuses anymore. So I got my family close, so they can come over here. All my friends, they can come over here, and I feel more like around them, you know.
You mentioned, you know, having your family around you. Your family, you could say, is a big part of how you became the baseball player you are. You have a very unique story. Tell us how, in essence, working with your and for your grandmother help build you into your strength.
Oh yeah, my grandma, I love her, man, and she was she's been big, huge part of my career, of me, of everything that happens to me so far. And I remember my grandpa, I never met him. He passed away when my youngest aunt was 2 years old. So my grandma, she have to raise 10 kids by herself. So she have like this mini industry, like that she make tamales to sell, you know, to support the family. And in Colombia, when you are 12 to 13 and you are pretty tall, they make you work. They make you do something to help the family. So my job in the family was to grind the corn, in a grinding corn machine. Every morning my grandma wake me up at 4 a.m. And I didn't like it because, you know, like when you're 12, you want to sleep into 10. She woke me up and I was grinding the corn machine. I remember that when I made the decision to play baseball, the very first pitch that I throw to the coach, it was so fast, then the coach react like late, and he got surprised, like, dude, you throw so hard. Like, do you ever play baseball before? And I say, no. And what do you do? Say, well, I live with my grandma, I help her to grind the corn. And he's like, that's why you throw hard, because you're doing exercise for your arm. And when he told me that, next morning, my grandma didn't wake me up. I was awake waiting for her. Like, okay, I'm ready, mom. Let's do it. So I got in love with the game, and I got in love with grinding the corn machine. And believe it or not, I think that gave me, like, a really healthy arm, because I got sore like everybody else, but not, like, seriously sore. And the type of arm that I have, like, every time that I pitch back-to-back-to-back, I feel better and better and better.
So do you ever grind corn anymore?
No more. But I'm thinking whenever I had a boy, I'm gonna buy a grinding corn machine and give it to him, because that worked for me. So hopefully it worked for him too.
It's a wonderful story, and I hope there are many more good stories we do with the Rays this year. Thank you for a few minutes.
No, thank you.
That's Ernesto Frieri, who saved 37 games for the Angels in 2013, and if he can bounce back after a tough season, can be an important part of the 2015 bullpen for the Rays. Now, another important part of the pen could be Jeff Beliveau. Beliveau last year at this time was just hoping to get to the big leagues. After an effective final few months, he's now the top lefty on the roster, at least while Jake McGee recovers from offseason elbow surgery. Beliveau also was part of an MLB All-Star team that toured Japan, and he reflected on that experience and how different things are now from a year ago for him.
I guess knowing that I don't have options, that kind of plays a role, because in recent history, the Rays have been the ones who use that. You know, they use the options, and they keep guys under their control, and I've done that the past 2 years, and, you know, it's nice to know, to feel confident with what I did at the end of the season last year, and, I got the opportunity to play in Japan. People noticed that what I did in the major leagues, and I feel like I got rewarded for it, and just ready to, you know, turn the page. It's a new season, and, you know, start off with what I ended off with last year.
What did you learn from the experience in Japan from a baseball side of things?
From the base? It's a different game over there, but it's still the same. There's still the same things you need to do to win, and that team was ready to go. They had practiced for like a month. That was their WBC team, and they came out ready to go, and they had great pitching. I mean, all their pitchers threw like five pitch six mix, and it was really cool. The atmosphere was great playing over there. It felt like FIFA World Cup soccer matches with the bangers and the horns. It was something else.
Were there pitchers from the States though that you picked their brain, that you got to meet who you didn't know before, and if so, who was helpful?
Yeah, there were a bunch of guys. Chris Capuano, nice guy. He was cool to talk with. Randy Choate, who was a left-hander, who was actually used to be here, and he was very cool to sit with in the bullpen and pick his brain, because he's got some experience. And
did you get a word in?
yeah, he could talk. that was cool. And then, you know, the whole coaching staff that was there, Francona. And Farrell and Nieves and Butterfield, you know, they were all great. And Maddox, I actually had him in spring training, so I'm familiar with how to work with him and how he is. So that was cool. It was definitely, everyone was great. Everyone was excited to be there, and you know, it was cool to see all of Japan. We saw four different cities in 12 days.
I'm sure the cultural experience had to be the big memory from that. What are the things you took away?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just their culture in general is awesome. They have so much respect. You don't see any trash. There's no littering. Everyone bows as a sign of respect. The food was unbelievable. I tried some very strange stuff. Sea urchin, abalone. I tried this, like, sake. This, like, it was almost like this moonshine sake. And it had a full snake, like a full live-size snake in the bottle. Not like the worm, like tequila. It was, like, a good 3-4 foot snake coiled up at the bottom of this thing. And we're in the store. The guy brought it out, and me, my dad, and Chris Carter. We were like, all right, we might as well try it. And we tried it. It's pretty good.
You've been bringing any of that home? That it's the best.
I don't think you could import that. No.
You also had a busy off-season stateside with the retirement of your high school jersey. What did that mean to you? Because there have been a lot of good athletes at Bishop Hendrickson High School.
It was awesome. I didn't know that I was the eighth person. You know, the school's been there for a long time. It's all guys, so there's a bunch of great athletes that go there. NHL players. We have an NFL guy, Will Blackman. But it's great being up next to Rocco Baldelli. You know, he's like the legend in that school. And me and him, I'm right next to him with my base. I'm 11, he's 22, so it's pretty cool.
You gonna share some stories with him this spring and during the year?
Yeah, I was talking to him this morning in the food room. We know each other. We just missed each other. He's 5 years older than me. But his legend has been around that school for a while.
As you get ready for this season, what are the things you're focusing on this spring?
The same things I work on every spring, just being consistent, getting my arm in shape, getting my body in shape, and being able to go out there anytime they give me the ball.
Because you went to Japan, are you further ahead, though, than you would normally be this time of year? And how do you make sure that you harness it so that when the bell really rings, you're ready to go?
I threw twice out there. I mean, I did get it going, but I don't know. It's no different than – I feel like last season I started throwing in November. I just started it early. So, and then this year – when I got back from Japan, I didn't start until January, so I kind of made adjustments there where I needed to, but I feel good right now, and I feel like I'm going to treat this like every other spring and try to win a job.
That's Jeff Beliveau, who posted a 2.63 ERA in 30 appearances last year for the Rays, and that's even after allowing 3 runs the final day of the regular season. Between Brad Boxberger, Kevin Jepsen, Grant Balfour, Frieri, and Beliveau, 5 of 7 spots in the bullpen should be filled, assuming health. Now, there's a considerable amount of competition for the other spots, especially with Ronald Belisario out with a fracture in his left shoulder. If the Rays add a second lefty, Mike Montgomery, who was just moved to the pen, will get some consideration. So will former Royal Everett Tiefert, who last year played in Korea. And I asked Tiefert about what Korea was like and how he came to sign with the Rays.
I think it's a young team. They have a lot of good pitching. The young position players from their trades that they made this offseason. I thought for me personally, I had success in a long relief role, and I kind of thought, that might be a spot that maybe I could help fill in. But I told Cash whatever he needs. I've started or relieved in the big league, so whatever they need, I'll try to do my best.
When you signed, was that after Cesar Ramos already had been dealt, and did that kind of factor into your thoughts?
When I signed, it was after the first of the year. So basically everything, all the moves had been done. There was a lot of turnover, at least in the bullpen per se, but I just thought it was a good opportunity. I'd heard a lot of great things about the organization, so figured why not.
This is your first year in the States outside of the Royals organization. Mm-hmm. So how hard was your decision in terms of where you wanted to go, and how many teams did you take a close look at?
Talked to a few teams, but the opportunity I felt was best here. And like I said, you know, talking to people about the organization, what kind of guys they have in the front office, this just kind of felt like the best fit. So, you know, after thinking about it, it really became a no-brainer.
You came here after a year outside the States in Korea. What was that whole experience like, and what did you take away from it?
It was a lot of fun. The experience was a lot of fun. Seoul's a great city. It's very westernized, so it wasn't very hard to get around. Some of the smaller cities were a little tougher, but the baseball, it's different, I guess. It's kind of tough to explain, but for a pitcher, it can be frustrating at times. But overall, I enjoyed my time over there.
When you say frustrating, give our fans an idea of what it's like for pitchers. I know it's known as a hitter's league.
Yeah, it's just kind of the small things that don't get noticed. The infielders kind of have a better idea of how to react to different things in the States. And the athleticism, I mean, is much better over here because you figure you're pulling from a talent pool of 50 million in Korea or whatever it is. I mean, just by sheer numbers, you're going to get more athletic guys over here. So you see balls that land in the outfield that aren't landing in the States or balls that get through the infield that don't normally happen over here. So as a pitcher, you can get testy at times, let's say.
How's the strike zone, comparatively speaking, too? Is that also tighter?
Yeah, it's much tighter. It's not really left or right or down. It's more the higher end of the strike zone. That mid-thigh pitch really doesn't get called very much, and me throwing a curveball, if I'm not getting a fastball up there, they really don't need to respect anything at that level. And I think that's what, you know, Kong, the guy who signed with Pittsburgh, that'll probably be his biggest adjustment, I think.
You mentioned the culture is fairly westernized. I think I remember reading something online that you helped try to, bridge the gap, though, between the other Korean players and interest them in what, professional bull riding?
Yeah, I've got a bunch of friends that are in the PBR, and I've watched the PBR, since I was a kid. So the time difference is so vast that on day games on Sunday, it'd be when the events would be going on Saturday night. So I would take my computer to the clubhouse, and all the Korean guys were absolutely stunned that somebody would willingly get on the back of a 1,600-pound bull. So they enjoyed watching it. They thought they're all crazy, though.
Any chance you'll ever get on one of those or have any interest in doing that?
Well, I had an opportunity to help load in the bulls in Anaheim when I was out there visiting some friends. And you sit in the stands and you're like, man, maybe I could do it one day. You know, just one ride. You know, well, once you get down and see truly how big those things are, I'll never do it. No way. No shot.
I would guess while you have a ride, a lot of ups and downs on the mound, it's nothing like riding the bull.
No, I mean, 99.99999%, I'll come out, you know, alive on the mound. You know, the odds are probably a little smaller getting on the back of a bull.
For our fans who might have seen you pitch for the Royals, may not have, what's the most important thing to know about you if you're giving your own kind of scouting report on Everett Tiefert?
You know, work fast and throw strikes. That's kind of I don't have anything overpowering. I don't have anything really great per se. But my 3-4 average pitches kind of play above because I feel I can command the zone pretty well. And I work quick, so hopefully this time clock thing won't really be a factor with me.
That's Everett Tiefert, who's made 45 major league appearances, all but 8 of them in relief. A reminder that we have daily interviews on our blog, raysradio.mlblogs.com. Now this Thursday, Dave and Andy are back at Hooters in Port Charlotte for the next Countdown to Opening Day show from 7 to 8. The guests include pitching coach Jim Hickey and outfielder Steven Souza Jr. That show also will be posted as a podcast on Friday if you happen to miss it. And again, read our blog, raysradio.mlblogs.com. And follow us on Twitter at Rays Radio or at Neil Solons. Thanks for joining us, and I'll talk with you next week.
Thank you for listening to the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. For more on the Rays this offseason, visit our blog at raysradio.mlblogs.com or follow us on Twitter @RaysRadio.